my senior year of university, I served as assistant director on a production of Electra. That role required me to do a not insignificant amount of research about ancient Greece, which is how I discovered that at the entrance of the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, there are three maxims, or aphorisms, inscribed. The first Delphic maxim says, "Know thyself." This concept has been repeated throughout time. Even Shakespeare snuck it into a speech from Polonius in Hamlet. "To thine own self be true." But one of the critical challenges to being true to oneself is recognizing that our own truth can change throughout our lives. This is a big part of why when I read through old journal entries I wrote at 16 or 24, I cringe. Not because I was doing anything or thinking anything horrible, but because that version of myself was putting value on things I could not possibly care less about today. And in some cases, I wasn't putting enough value on things I maybe now wish I had. Our desires, our passions, and our values ebb and flow like the tide. So how can we really know ourselves? I chat with Gia Bagarpour about how the choices she has made, both in her career and in her personal life, were all based on her heart's deepest desires. This is the first episode of the newly named Don't Talk to Me About Work, and it's called Reflection. Okay, so Gia, I always start the podcast with the same question, which is, what is your earliest memory of what you wanted to be when you grew up? Like, what's the earliest you can remember of someone saying, Gia, what would you like to be when you grow up? And you saying, like, I want to be a fire truck or something.
At a very young age, I was convinced that I was going to be a lawyer, which, I mean, I don't know how old that was, maybe 5 or 6. I had no idea what a lawyer did. It wasn't anything that I could grasp. But I think it was because I heard my dad being a lawyer and I thought that, hey, that sounds pretty cool. I'll be a lawyer. So as far as I recall, that was my initial, I guess, aspiration, which is crazy because, I mean, who at 5 years old wants to be a lawyer?
It sounds, the way that you phrase all of that, like you did not end up becoming a lawyer. At what point did you diverge from that influence from your dad?
So interestingly, I actually have a very, very vivid memory, and my mom might have even kept this, but when I was in, I think it was like the last year of what I think is elementary school in the States, I always get confused because our system is a little bit different. I created an advert, a print ad for jeans. It was for Levi's. We had to like make some kind of something. I think it was an artwork, or I can't remember what the task was, but I ended up making an ad for Levi's. And I even remember it because it was a play on the word jeans. And that's when I kind of figured I want to do something with advertising. You know, again, probably didn't have a good grasp around what that was, but liked the idea of it and had already thought about, you know, this cool little Levi ad that I had created for school. So that was, I think, the first initial memory of me wanting to be in advertising. And then it stuck with me. I think the idea of it just stuck with me. It never really left. And then when I got to the point to make a decision around where I wanted to go for college and what I wanted to study, it was still with me. And I chose my college based on the fact that they offered a really robust marketing and communications course. So yeah, I don't have a distinct like memory of, oh yes, this is it. But I remember this ad that I made and I remember it having an impact on me.
You chose your university. Was it like nearby where you lived or did you have to like go far away?
No, it actually ended up being in Johannesburg, where I grew up. So I didn't have the typical college experience of leaving my hometown. I was accepted into a number of different universities, but this was the one that had this course that I wanted to do that spoke to me the most. And looking back, it is probably a small regret in my life that I never got to have that true college experience. But I chose the University of Johannesburg for the course. And in a way, I'm really glad that I did because I met some of the greatest people who are still friends in that experience. And I also got to be in a real African city and experience a university of that size and stature in a place where there was just so much diversity. Whereas I think some of the other universities that I was accepted into, like the University of Cape Town, which UCT as it's known, which I have no, I think it's a wonderful place, but I think it's quite monotone. So in a sense, I'm really glad I got to have the experience of this big campus with so many different kinds of people. And even though I didn't get the away from home experience, some of my best memories in terms of friendships, in terms of just fun, was there.
What was the course like?
So it was interesting because it was a mixture of, you know, quite heavily focused on the theory and the practice of marketing, which in itself can be somewhat, it can be both. It can be very analytical and it can also be quite creative. So there were aspects of it that, like the financial side of marketing, that I was highly disinterested in. I just couldn't care about that stuff. Very important in what I do now and, you know, has an absolute bearing and you should know those things, but it didn't speak to the creative side of me. And then the communications part of it was very theoretical. I found it to be quite dry and quite boring. Towards the end of the three-year degree, it's a three-year undergraduate degree, we ended up having to form these little pods and actually work on live marketing projects, which I think was some of the best experience that I ever got, because it forced me to work in a team, to work on real, real briefs. So having that opportunity was, putting the theory into practice was the best part of those 3 years. A lot of it was just, you know, good old theory, which until you're actually doing it, it's just theory.
So while you were at college, at any point did you think to yourself, maybe I should try something else, like underwater basket weaving or something other than marketing?
No, I'm so boring. I didn't. What I did end up doing, though, is after my undergraduate degree, I went to ad school because I felt that the degree itself was very general and, as I said, quite theoretical. And even though we had those little, you know, groups where we broke out and worked on live briefs, it was only for the last year of the course. And I really wanted to get my hands into advertising. So I pretty much stayed on that track. I never veered. At one point, I thought I might switch to psychology because that was something else that I was quite interested in. But I think it was part of my market. I had to study psych for marketing because, you know, a lot of marketing is obviously informed by consumer behavior, and understanding the psychology of human behavior is pretty critical. So at one point I thought, maybe I'll do psychology instead and I'll switch. But I decided that I probably didn't have the constitution to handle listening to other people's problems all day. So I quickly decided no. But I often wonder and sometimes think that maybe it's something I'll just go and study for fun in my later years, you know.
Where you moved on to after your undergrad, did you stay at the same university or did you go somewhere else for that?
I went to an ad school, also in Johannesburg. Never left Johannesburg. It was a very well-known school. There was a couple of different locations around the country, and they had kind of set the standard for advertising, and they fed a lot of talent into ad agencies, not just in South Africa, but within Africa. So I really wanted to go there. There was a second school that opened that was almost a competitor to that school. One of the founding principals left and opened this secondary school. And I got accepted into both. And I was at this crossroads of the AAA School of Advertising, which is where I went to, was this established place that you didn't have to have a lot of money to go there. It was a fairly good, diverse school that welcomed everyone. Whereas Vega at the time, which was the competitor, had become this like privileged ad school where you just threw money at the problem, and it had this reputation of kids who didn't really know what they wanted to do went there. And again, I decided, yeah, I could go to the cool, new, shiny one where I'll probably bump into some old friends from high school, but I'd much prefer to be in this melting pot of interesting and diverse people. And again, one of the best decisions I made, because it was actually the place where I formed some of my closest friendships with people of color, like true friendships with people of color. And I learned so much about fellow Black South Africans that I didn't know, even after having gone to the University of Johannesburg. So it was a small school, so there was really good opportunity to have intimate relationships. And when you're working in a creative environment, I just feel like you're doing such interesting things and you're burning the midnight oil most of the time, that that's where you really bond with people. So I had a really, really good experience there. It opened my eyes up. It taught me about how to think about an audience when you're communicating. Think about a cultural insight and not, you know, whitewash everything or blanket everything and think everybody's the same. So it gave me that perspective.
How long was the program?
It was just a year. So it was essentially a postgraduate diploma. And because I had the marketing degree, I could go straight into the final year. And that was basically, you did a 6-week internship. So it was very, very much a hands-on program. And I got my internship, I landed an internship at one of the most reputable ad agencies in South Africa, which I was really excited about. I ended up staying there and working there for a few years afterwards. But that internship, again, just putting the theory into practice was one of the best things that I think I could have ever done, because it gave me real, like, okay, this is how stuff works. You know, it's great to read it in a book and hear your professor talking about it, but here we are in real life making stuff happen.
What was the experience like transitioning from the internship into a position? Was there like a gap of time in between, or was it just like, you're graduating, right? Can we just hire you now, please?
Yeah, it was pretty much that. I went from graduation to getting hired. And it was a tough decision, because a lot of my friends were going overseas at that time, specifically to London. So there was this sort of mass exodus of South African families leaving the country, because it was just a point where South Africa was going through a bad patch. And a lot of my friends were doing this 2-year visa program. That's what the UK was offering South Africa, because we're an old colony. They don't offer them anymore, but essentially you could go over for 2 years and work and then come back. And I was quite drawn to that idea. I was like, oh, maybe I can go to London for 2 years and just do some odd jobs and float around and come back. But I think the pressure from my parents was very real. Like, you've got this great internship. Now they're offering you a job. What are you even thinking about London for? You know, you can go to London later. London will be there. This won't. And I think I was, you know, I don't think I was pressured by them, but I certainly was influenced by them. And I also was kind of proud of myself. I'd landed this gig and it was really good. And it was a great opportunity to get in the door with one of the best ad agencies in South Africa. So I took it and I stayed.
When you were an intern there, did you feel like you were getting mentored by the people? Or was it just kind of like, here are the projects that the interns do. We'll see you in 6 weeks when this is over.
No, I was so lucky. I had a wonderful, wonderful boss who took me under her wing. She had gone to the same ad school as me. So we had that common connection. And she really, like, got me involved in as many things as possible and exposed me to as many things as possible. But I'll say this, the ad agency is called the Jupiter Drawing Room. It exists still in Cape Town, no longer in Johannesburg. They had a very good internship program overall, because they had, over the years, hired young talent out of school and basically nurtured them to be creative superstars. That was their secret sauce, almost, you know, get them young, train them well, teach them well, and then let them fly. And they really did that. So outside of having this wonderful boss who made it her mission to expose me, there was also a very good program in place. And I think that it's one thing to say we're going to hire young talent. It's another thing to nurture it. And I think is where they really excelled, as they pushed hard to, you know, bring in the right people. And that's why it was such a tough decision for me to leave to go to London or to stay, because this was like a closed door. You didn't get this opportunity, you know. It was a great place for nurturing talent.
How long were you there for?
I stayed for 4 years. Again, I'm a super loyal person, sometimes to a fault. And so I probably overstayed my welcome a little bit. I could have left a little bit earlier than I did. But the agency transitioned. It went from being a medium-sized, like very sought-after creative shop to a large-size agency. They won a whole lot of very big clients overnight. We actually called it the perfect storm because they won three of the biggest South African pieces of business in the space of, I think it was like 2 or 3 months. Yeah, the agency transitioned overnight. Things changed quite dramatically. I also moved. I started in what they called account management, which is essentially project management, because I didn't know whether I wanted to be a copywriter or a strategist. The way that agencies were set up at the time, project management gave you an oversight of all the different disciplines in an ad agency. And somebody said to me, if you don't know what you want to be, go there and figure it out because you'll see everything that happens. And I transitioned from project management into strategic planning and spent the first 2 years in project management, last 2 years in the strategy department, which was one of the coolest places to work and be.
So how did you make the decision to leave?
I got offered a job in a corporate environment. So on the client side, on a marketing team, as a brand manager for horribly boring. It was insurance, but it was for Virgin Money, which in South Africa at the time was, you know, this UK brand that was just this game changer of a company, Richard Branson at the helm. It's such a challenger brand, doing things so differently. The brand actually spoke to me more than anything else. I lasted, I think, 9 months in that place. I hated it so much. I remember like getting an access card, you know, to access the building. And I was like, what? Now I have this access card, and they gave me this branded lanyard to hang the access card on. And I was like, oh man, I've just hit corporate, you know, the corporate world in the biggest way. This lanyard is my chain. It's like keeping me tied here. So yeah, I didn't last very long there. It wasn't the worst move because it showed me what I didn't ever want to do again. It also wasn't the best move, but hey man, we all make some wrong turns in life.
So it kind of sounds like up to this point, and it might be beyond this point, I have no idea, but up to this point, all the decisions that you're making are based on your career, right? There's nothing really else influencing you at this point, except occasionally your parents, which is fair enough. We've all been there.
Yeah.
So would you say that at this time in your life, like your career was kind of your main focus?
Oh, totally. I mean, my mom was and continues to be a housewife, and I absolutely love my mom and have all the respect in the world for what she did and the sacrifices she made to bring up my sister and I, because I'm now a mom and I get it. I always wanted to have a career, and it was a big important thing for me. The fact that, you know, my parents had paid for this high school education that was pretty excessive, that I had gotten into all these great places, it was like I needed to focus on my career. I also wanted to make money, and I wanted to have this lifestyle that I was, you know, enjoying as a young person with disposable income, just having a good time and feeling free, you know. So yeah, I think my career was hugely important to me. And perhaps it wasn't like this thing that I was like necessarily fully aware of, but it was what was driving me.
I have to assume it was more than 9 months in, you decide to start looking for something else.
Oh no, I swear it was 9 months. I was there for 9 months. So what ended up happening is I ran this account as the brand manager, and I worked with an ad agency who supported all the marketing and communication for Virgin Money Insurance. I started working with this very small creative shop that was executing all the ads and doing all our strategy. I got to know the founders, and I'd always known, you know, this particular agency. They're called Black River Football Club. They became a very sexy creative shop in Johannesburg that, you know, if you were any kind of good creative, you wanted to work there. And so I was like, oh, I'm getting to partner with these guys and make ads, and it's cool and fun. And I started to develop a relationship with the founders in that time. I told them, I'm really unhappy. Like, I don't want to be on the client side. I don't want to be in marketing. I want to get back into advertising. And they were looking for a strategist. But I couldn't resign and go there because effectively they were working for my boss. So it was a little bit messy. So I ended up resigning. I interviewed at a couple of different places. I don't remember how it all went down, but basically there was this agreement that, okay, I've selected Black River. I called up my old company. I told them I was going there. And I ended up starting to work at Black River as their lead strategist. So I was, for the first time, going to be leading up strategy. And ironically, I was a department of one, so I was leading myself. But it had this, you know, cool air about it. And I was going back into a world that I loved. You know, I love being in a creative environment. I love the different types of people that ad agencies typically tend to attract. And the smarts, there's a lot of smart people in advertising. There really are. And I found myself in this kind of corporate Johannesburg with, I know this sounds terribly judgy, but very middle of the road folks that I couldn't have these robust intellectual conversations about consumer buying behavior, you know. So I was very excited to go back to that world and to be in this cool creative shop where I had that exposure again. And so yeah, I took the job, and it was also a little bit messy because my now husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, was a client of Black River. And I basically signed the contract saying I would never work on his business. I would never be front facing. I would do all the background stuff, but I would never like liaise with him and present to him or do any work directly with him. I mean, that never happened because I was department of one. But I ended up, my now husband was my client for a while.
That's hilarious. There's a concept that I'm kind of obsessed with, and I love to talk to people on this podcast about this concept of refilling the well, because I think in work, regardless of what you do, it's people drawing on you constantly. And so I wonder if you feel like the people that you were working with were helping to kind of refill that well in a way anyway.
Yeah, I think it was both the people and getting back to the work that I like to do. I wasn't doing work that excited me. You know, the role that I was in at Virgin Money was very numbers focused. It was about, you know, how many insurance policies did we sell, which of course, 1000% important, but not something that was really exciting for me. There's a whole bunch of people who find that fascinating, and that's great. They need to be doing those things. I wasn't that person. And I also got back to my people. You know, I was back in a creative space, in a small, nimble place where there was people from different walks of life with different opinions, and there was very much space to be yourself. You weren't all given an access card with the same lanyard and part of this, like, you know, this group of sameness. And that's not, you know, to say that everybody was the same, but it certainly just felt a little bit like that in your little cubicle. You know, this was an open plan environment. I was back to what I knew, where people shared ideas and you worked hard, but you had fun and you thought about problems, you know, in society for brands, and you came up with ways to solve them. And you worked with the Zulu speaking person across the table who grew up in a township and has a completely different perspective to me, who grew up in, you know, privileged white South Africa with immigrant parents. I love that. I continue to love that.
What about like mentorship and leadership in that environment?
I mean, my leadership in that place was phenomenal. The founder is still to this day one of my closest, like, I don't know, he's like a wise man, you know. His name is Ahmed Tilly, and he is a devout Muslim. We used to not have meetings on Fridays because he went to mosque every week. That was his time, and nobody messed with that time. He refused to work on any brands that were alcohol or gambling focused because that was, you know, against his values. But he brought this wonderful sense of calm and faith, but not in a religious way. to the table that I just, I mean, I continue to be in awe of him. He's a wonderful human being, and a very honest human being. He refused to work with clients that mistreated any of his team members. He gave everybody an equal opportunity at the table. And then his partner, she was this fiery, older South African lady of Lebanese descent. And we had this firecracker and this very calm, diligent man working together. And it was really, I was in the middle of this because I reported to both of them. I just felt like I was in this perfect world of, you know, energy and vibrancy mixed with like real honesty and respect. And in advertising, you usually, you know, it's Mad Men. Everybody's crazy. And would they take the time to go to mosque? Probably not. You know, there's this terrible sort of perception and reputation around ad men. And he was not that. I loved that place. And I left because I came to the States. And I cried my eyes out when I left that place because it wasn't work. It was like home. It was wonderful.
So why on earth would you go to America? It sounds terrible.
Well, I mean, you're either leaving for love or money, right? So I left for love. Supanta, my husband, got offered this opportunity to, you know, to come to DC of all places and head up marketing Fernando's Peri Peri. And in all honesty, we had been looking to travel together as a couple to work elsewhere just before 2008. I'm going to say pandemic, but it was definitely not a pandemic before the recession. Pandemic on my brain. Just before the recession, we were looking quite seriously at moving to Shanghai. The advertising scene in Shanghai was starting to take off. I was very interested in that. The recession hit and it wasn't an option anymore. Jobs were no longer on the table. So when he got offered this opportunity, we were like, let's go. We're going. We were close to getting engaged. It was going to happen regardless of moving or not. And so we got engaged, actually ended up getting married very quickly, just with our families. Our friends didn't even know. And we moved to DC. And I couldn't work for the first almost year of living here, which was a huge change and a very humbling experience.
Was that because of like your visa?
Yeah. I had to get a specific visa that took a lot longer than it was supposed to take. It was supposed to be 3 months, and then it ended up being close to almost a year before I got it. And it was actually because of a paper trail mess up. So it was an annoying thing that continued and shouldn't have. But I spent a year having to figure out who is Jia when she's not working, because that's what I had been doing for so long. And it was tough. I'm not even going to pretend that it was rosy and lovely. And I moved to a city where I didn't know anybody, and we didn't have kids and we didn't have a dog. So there was no way that we were just easily going to meet people. There weren't these instant connections. And so I decided, okay, cool. I'm going to take up Spanish because I've always wanted to learn Spanish, and maybe I'll meet some people through that. And so I did that. I did some volunteer work. I worked for an organization called the Taproot Foundation, which pairs professional people with volunteer organizations. And I actually ended up meeting some really nice people through that. We were going back to have a wedding party, so I spent some time planning a wedding party. I learned to cook. I had no idea how to cook. I did, but it was bad. And I just completely became obsessed with cooking because I could find all these cool ingredients. So yeah, it was really good in that it forced me to figure out what I liked besides working, you know. And then I planned all these trips because I had time. So I was dragging Supanta to all these, you know, crazy places. And as hard as it was, I look back and I'm very glad that it happened because it forced me to pause and it forced me to really consider, okay, who's Jia? Who is Jia besides the strategist who works in advertising?
So how did you get from unemployed Jia, who's not allowed to have a job, to employed Jia, currently employed Jia?
So I got I don't even remember what my I think it's called an L2. That was my visa, an L2. a spousal visa. And I started, I was like, okay, I'm going back to advertising. That's what I know. And I was very disappointed in what I found, because I realized that I wasn't in an ad city. And I knew that coming in here, I didn't come in blindly, but I thought there has to be something, you know. I know this is like the epicenter of politics and policy. Man, if I was a lawyer, this would have been a good place, but I'm not. So let's figure this out. What I did is I actually went and looked at who had won awards in the last year. And I just started cold calling people like, hi, I have no experience in the States, but I have all of these credentials. I think working in agencies that were, you know, WPP owned, which is a big advertising conglomerate, had some weight. Also ran into a couple of people who knew of the agencies that I'd worked in. So I wasn't coming like from the darkness, by any means, but I didn't have any US experience. And South Africa at the time was probably about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years behind in terms of internet connectivity. And so digital marketing, I knew nothing about digital marketing. I had done some Facebook and that was kind of it, you know. The jobs that they were looking for 7 years ago were very digitally focused. Brand strategy wasn't something that people were looking for. And so I fell short in those two areas, not having US experience and then obviously not having the digital experience. And so I ate a lot of humble pie. I had a lot of doors closed on me. I interviewed at so many different places. Sapanta, my husband, started working with a small agency where I met you, Jordan. And he was like, you should talk to these guys. They only really do social marketing. They could probably do with some help in just the traditional foundational understanding of advertising and strategy, more importantly. My husband offered my services for free to these guys. It's like, oh, just go and help them out. see what you think, you know, show them what you can do, show them your chops and solve my problem while you're at it. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll go and do this. You know, I'm bored, so I may as well do this. It was a great meeting. You know, they asked me what I was doing. I think they were impressed by what I brought to the table. And so we started having conversations about, you know, me working for them. And I think it started out as in a contractor role. Yeah, I was just supposed to come in as a contractor. I was hired as a contractor. I think at the time everybody was, because they were still setting themselves up. Myself and another guy joined exactly on the same day, and they jumped from 3 to 5. And I stayed there for almost 4 years too. So there's Loyal Gia plugging away again. Amazing experience. They taught me digital and I taught them brand. So we had that exchange of, you know, knowledge. But again, it also seems to be the theme. I was kind of between two founders, you know, so I was the person in the middle. Three's tough when it's a business, you know. Three's tough generally.
Yeah. So knowing you as I do, I know what comes next in this story. And I just have to ask, like, at what point in your journey at this agency does it occur to you to go into business for yourself? Because that just, up to this point, it doesn't sound like you haven't considered that before now, right? So where did that idea even come from?
Well, at both Black River and at the last agency I was at, I wasn't just doing strategy. I was helping the founders run their businesses. I was managing people. I was hiring. I was setting up systems. So I was going beyond just being a strategist. I was actually in more of like a managerial role in both places, with different responsibilities in each. And I just got to the point in the kind of probably at the 3 year mark where I was like, I'm doing this for other people. Why am I not doing this for myself? You know, I'm spending so much energy building other people's businesses. And yeah, they're great and it's been a wonderful experience. But if I can do it for them, why can't I do it for myself? So there was that. And there also was the sense of, I didn't really find a place in DC, an agency that I felt was really going to be the place that I wanted to stay at and be part of and, you know, have some kind of legacy in. I just I interviewed at a lot of places. I got exposed to a lot of places in the 4 years that I worked on, you know, the digital marketing scene. And I was like, there's nowhere here that really talks to me. So I'm just going to cultivate my own little world of what I want to work in, you know, and be in. And it took me a year and a half to take the plunge. I thought about it every day. I spoke about it with Sapanta at length. I stalled on it. I was scared. Of course I was scared. You know, it's a big move. And I'd only been living here for 4 years, you know, so four and a half years. So I didn't have the depth of network that I would have had had I stayed in Johannesburg. So it was risky, but man, what have I got to lose? I'm going to take my laptop and set up a desk, and the shit hits the fan, I'll go back to work. I'll get a job. I was very lucky to be able to do that because Sapanta supported me. He was like, yeah, we can live off my salary and we can do this. We can, you know, we kind of know what we need to survive for the next 3 months. Let's see how it goes. So he gave me the space to do that. I'm very lucky to have had that opportunity.
So what has that experience been like? Because it's been, my God, it's been like almost 4 years. Yeah.
It'll be 4 years in June. Yeah. Yeah. There we go at the 4 year mark. I think I'm staying with this one though. Yeah. You know, it's such a different beast because the stresses are different. The anxiety around, am I going to have work, is constant. And somebody gave me a really good piece of advice. I don't even know who it was, but I continue to tell this to people who come to me now to ask me about, you know, going on their own. And it's just lean into the highs and lean into the lows, because that's how this is. It's a roller coaster. It's not this consistent paycheck, you know, where what you do every day is kind of the same. And, you know, when the money's coming in and when the money's going out. So you got to kind of get on this roller coaster and have the constitution for it. Trust it, you know, which, I mean, I'm still learning that. I by no means have learned that, but I definitely feel more confident now when things are quiet and I don't have as much work rolling in. I'm like, okay, this is a quiet low point. I'm going to actually enjoy the time. I'm going to focus on other things. It was incredibly hard. And I think for the first year of being alone, running my own business, I really, really felt anxiety that I've never felt before in my life. I'm generally not an anxious person. I'm pretty mellow. But this was sleepless nights and just trying to figure out how I'm going to do things. Like I felt like I was constantly just winging it as I was going, you know. That's how you learn. You got to do a little bit, fall a bit, come back a bit, you know. It's just the process.
I also think that when we look at your story as a whole, right? After the hour or so that we've been talking, one of the things that you've mentioned seeking it is just a diversity of voices in order to kind of help you grow in some ways and just to help you create in other ways, whether it's racial diversity or just the backgrounds that people come from and say, like, we're going to make something really cool together because I have no idea what you're bringing to the table and you don't know what I'm bringing to the table either. And I think regardless of what your comfort zone is or your gut instincts tells you, like, sometimes just throwing yourself into those opportunities you come up with some amazing results from that. And I feel like some of the parts in your stories where you, no one's going to see you because this is a podcast, but like the parts of the stories where you really light up are the parts of the stories where you were getting that kind of like diversity of voices around you, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. And honestly, that was the hardest part about deciding to start my own business and go alone, because I wasn't going to have a team of different people surrounding me. And so in the last 4 years, I've sought out those people to work with and to collaborate with. And I've sought out those people when I've selected clients. I actually laugh every time because the majority of my clients are not Americans. They're all kinds of foreigners who find themselves in America, which I can obviously very much relate to. I was happiest in the places where I found diversity. And I think it's just very interesting to put a whole lot of different people's perspectives around a table.
So your son came into the world just before the pandemic, got that one in under the wire so you didn't have to deliver a baby in a pandemic, which I do not envy any of the women who've had to do that. Do you think, because up to this point, it sounds like to anyone listening that your career has been a huge part of your identity. And there have obviously been places where you've, you know, moving to America was part of a compromise with your partner and making those decisions. But your career has what driven you in a lot of ways. Do you think the like pie chart of your identity, that work is a different percentage now that you have a son?
Absolutely. And just trying to figure out who I am post having a son and becoming a mother. I mean, it's not the same. There's aspects of me that are, of course, the same, but things have changed and I can't be the person I was prior to his birth. I can be aspects of that person for sure, but the emphasis on my career has shifted. It's a little bit harder for me because I run my own business. I somewhat have this like feeling of, you know, I have to keep that going. And so I can't coast, you know. I think when you're working for somebody, you can maybe just like hide a little bit in the background and dip off here and there. I could very easily do that by just saying no thanks to work. But I don't know, I feel very committed to trying to keep it going. At the same time, my priority is my son. And so it's a hard compromise. I actually had to make a decision at the beginning of this year, because last year I was trying to do both and I was failing dismally. I've got to pick something. He's either got to go to full-time daycare and I've got to work 5 days a week, or we are in a situation where we have a part-time nanny. So she comes in and I work on the days that she's here, but then I can't be at 100%. I've got to be at 75%, you know, so I had to make that decision and it was tough. It was a tough one to make. My priorities lie with my child for sure, but there is this crisis of identity, you know, who am I? What am I doing? What are the parts of me that I want to carry forward? And what are some of the things that I need to let go of? And I think the letting go is the hardest part.
Somebody who's listening to this podcast now, what would you hope their takeaway from listening to you tell your story would be?
For anyone who's listening, I think it's really important, to me at least, that you pursue what's in your heart. You know, I think I had some influence from my parents and I took a wrong turn when I ended up in a place that I didn't feel was right. But I think you'll know. So listen to your gut and pursue what's in your heart, and you'll be the best version of yourself in a place that you're happy. You know, I know that it's not always easy to be in a work environment that is good and makes you feel happy. But to me, work is, it's a big part of what we do. It's certainly not the be all and end all, but it's the place where we spend the most amount of time. So, you know, if you're going to do it, just be happy in it and be you, you know. I don't have this amazing story of changing paths halfway through or amazing like self-exploration, but I know that I was the happiest and am the happiest in the places that make me feel good about myself and are a reflection of me.
Well, thank you so much. This was wonderful. I really thoroughly enjoyed myself. I hope you didn't find the questioning to be too painful.
No, not at all. I just, you know, I've never really had an opportunity to talk about my story. So it was lovely to go back. Some good memories and a nice trip down memory lane.
I don't know if there's better advice out there than to follow your heart. Just remember to check in with yourself regularly, because what your heart says at 18 might be different than what it's telling you at 33 or 58, and that's okay. We change a lot over our lifetimes, and we have to periodically reacquaint ourselves with our dreams. This episode's guest was Gia Bagarpour, a brand and communication strategist. To find out more about Gia, visit withgeorgia.work or check out her Instagram, work_with_Georgia. If you want to acquaint yourself with what I'm up to, you can check out my website, jordanrizzieri.com, or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at jordanrizzieri. Until next time, know thyself. Don't Talk to Me About Work is an independent podcast. Our managing producer is Jeremy Steinkamp, and our artwork was created by Ashley Steinkamp. I'm Jordan Rizzieri, executive producer and host.